We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, everybody. What? Oh, my goodness. Listen. Gabe's got his Kelsey Plum Dog t-shirt on. Oh my gosh, it's bigger than hoops. That's what I have on today. Because look, the WNBA championship was crowned last night, and we're going to chop it up right now on Courtside with Christy and Gabe right here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I am Christy Winterscott, joined as always by my guy, Gabe Ibrahim. And Gabe, what a conundrum, what a crescendo of action in the WNBA championship, where the Aces win their back-to-back WNBA titles in dramatic fashion, shorthanded at all.
It's one of the most stunning victories I can remember in the WNBA finals. There's been a couple. I kind of started making a list, but then I was like, I don't want to shortchange any game that I don't like have a clear picture. But this is one of the best WNBA finals games I've ever seen. This is one of the weirder ones too. We had a lot of weird things going on that we'll get into. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. My brain was so locked in on, okay, we're Friday. We have game five. You know, Friday's going to be game five. I texted Dano, our podcast host of Dice It Up. I think I texted him earlier in the game, like, you know, hey, I don't think the Aces have it tonight, but they're playing well enough that, like, you know, they can get it. They can get there for game five. I think they can win game five. Uh-huh. So in my brain, I was so locked in on game five.
Yeah.
And then Asia Wilson just decided, hey, no, we're going home. You're going to have a free Friday night. And I appreciate it because they just stepped up and won without Chelsea Gray, without Kia Stokes, without Candace Parker, who has not been in the picture for a while.
For a minute. Yeah.
CP. I'm shocked. That's why I have the little title here says shock. Aces shock Liberty. I didn't think there was any way that the Aces could shock us, but they did.
They sure did. Yeah.
I'm very surprised.
Yeah. You know what? In the first quarter, I was a little concerned. Well, you know what? I was extremely concerned because you could tell that the hinges were a little loose for the Aces in terms of how well they were taking care of the ball or not, right? They had 8 turnovers and some of them were just like soaring straight out of bounds. And, you know, I was like, oh man, they really missed Chels. And then they got it together. And I think they only ended up with 13 turnovers for the entire game.
Same as the Liberty. Yep.
Yeah.
They had 8 in the first half.
8 in the first half. I said quarter, but yeah, 8 in the first half.
No, I'm sorry. You were right. I'm sorry. 8 first quarter turnovers. 8 first quarter turnovers. That is my bad.
I know. I was up late.
Did you see Alicia talk about the Doris? Or no, I'm not sorry. I'm talking about the NBA. Oh my God. Holly interviewed.
I did see that. Yeah.
Alicia after the first quarter, and she goes, "You guys had 8 first quarter turnovers, and Alicia goes, Jesus, we did? But, you know,
it, you got to stop throwing it all over the place, I think she said. But she had a lot of them, too.
They were so optimistic.
Corrected, you know, she corrected it.
They were just so optimistic the whole time. They, when they talked to Becky after the second quarter, first quarter, it was like so optimistic the entire time.
Yeah. But what I thought was funny was before the game, there were questions being pitched to Becky about game plan and defensive schemes. Like, how are you going to manage your players right now? You can't have an emergency pickup, you know, of any players in the finals and all that, all the rules and everything. And not that you would want that anyway, to mess up the little bit of chemistry and understanding that you have in the first place. But she said, we're going to throw every defensive action at them that we can. And we may not know what we're doing, but neither will New York. So I was just like, just go out there. And, you know, they can't scout against it. So it was almost like in their favor because of the rejuvenation, if you will, of what they could do defensively, being shorthanded like that. They had to come up with it in a day and a half and work through it and then throw it out there in an elimination game for New York, right? So New York is probably like, this is what we were expecting, but now they're down these two players. What is their game plan going to change to? And they didn't have time to change, right? They didn't have time to make those adjustments. So let's talk about the defense. I mean, it was a rock fight in terms of the score being 39-30 at the half. We were talking about the turnovers for the Aces in the first half as well, in the first quarter, along with those eight. But it was the defense, right? I think Jonquel Jones only had 8 touches all game long. So it wasn't that she was missing, but in the case of Stewie, gosh, she was not getting her shots down. Well, she just needed one shot to fall. They lose by 1 point. And Stewie only gets 3 shots to fall all game. So credit the defense from Las Vegas for denying touches for JJ, where, I mean, the height advantage was something that I was concerned about without Stokes in there. You know, big guard, Chelsea Gray, 6'1", right? They're losing a lot of their height and strength. So, you know, they did a good job of scrambling and not allowing touches, keeping New York off the glass because of their size advantage. So I just thought it was incredibly impressive defensively to come up with the scheme after losing out on 2 starters, right, with the injury, and then coming in there and executing. So, you know, you have to tip your hat and shake the hand of Becky Hammon, who to me is a savant in the game, and just with her wisdom and belief in her team. And she was just like, in some of the, you know, mic'd huddles, she was like, we got a little momentum right now. Like, just, and it wasn't even anything she was writing schematically at that moment, right? As soon as they sit down, she's telling them that. Like, she's giving them that good juju, that good energy, that good belief and confidence, right? Before she even gets into anything tactically sound on the whiteboard, right? She's like, the momentum. Like, let's go. Like, we got to get stops and scores. We got to just bear down defensively. And, you know, that's what you do. Like, it's the first thing you say when you sit down with your team and the last thing you say out of the huddle that resonates with your players. And so I just thought it was an incredible job by Becky Hammon, too, to lay a plan in place, and an extraordinary job by the team to execute it. Because, you know, one without the other is no good.
So I want to talk about the defense, but I also want, I got to echo you on Becky Hammon. I thought, and that's kind of what I said, like, just like the entire tone of the team, the entire game was, we got this. And it's one thing to like tell yourself that.
Right.
But it's another thing when you can actually believe it and it comes across as like, we actually believe this. We actually think this is gonna happen. And it's not that crazy to think of with this team, because obviously they are the defending champions. You know, even without Chelsea, without Candace, without Kia Stokes, they still have five players that you would take on any team. At the very least, you have Alicia Clark, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, and Asia Wilson. Every team in the league wants them. And all of them have championship medal. All of them understand what to do. It was just, and you had Chelsea Gray still on the sidelines coaching. You had Candace Parker still there in the background, making sure everyone brought what they needed to bring.
They did.
And it was just like that confidence, I think, goes back to Becky Hammon. And I think she deserves a huge amount of credit for that, because it's easy there to get like, you're nervous. She was nervous.
Yeah.
The whole team was nervous. Yeah. You're not actually fully confident when you're doing something. No. But just to have that aura of like, we are good. We are going to figure this out. Even when we're down 10, the attitude was, We're only down 10. Hey, when we're down 60, we're only down 6. Right. Hey, when we're down 12, we're only down 12. That doesn't we can come back from that. And that's exactly what they did. They just kept chopping. They found the time in that third quarter to go off. And yeah. I think, as you mentioned, defense was there all night. And I think the two players, again, that deserve a massive amount of credit are Asia Wilson and Alicia Clark.
Yeah.
Alicia, you know, I would say how many – the vast majority of possessions she was on Breanna Stewart in this game. I think we could say that. Other players had time on her, but Alicia Clark had the main assignment there. Asia Wilson had the main assignment on Jonquil Jones. Had to be there, had to not be in foul trouble, had to stay on them the entire game and deny touches. Amazing job by those two.
Yeah.
And, man, we got to talk a little bit more about Asia. Because yeah. That was – that was a I'm the best player on the planet, and this conversation's over.
Yeah.
Type of series, type of season, type of game.
Yeah.
She just decided at some point that I'm not losing this game.
Right.
And you only see the best players ever do this, and she's certainly already there.
Yeah.
And she is, how old is Asia? 25, maybe?
I think they said 27.
27. Okay. So Asia's only 27. We got a long way to go.
Yeah.
We got a long way to go of this player who is already the best player in women's basketball. And I, you know, no offense to you, I love Breanna Stewart. She's an amazing player. I love Alyssa Thomas. She's an amazing player. Wilson's on a different level right now. I think this game proved it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, 24 and 16. Okay. For the record, let's just go ahead and give her, future Hall of Famer, you know,
yeah,
a couple times
sure.
over. Let's just go ahead and hand that to her, because when you can come into that kind of adverse environment and climate for your team, and your team needs you, and you know that, and you bring that, that's a different level, like what you're talking about. And when you have that level of mentality, and, you know, to hear her after the game, albeit with, you know, some sips of champagne involved too, but it was really funny. But I was watching all the pressers and all of, you know, Sydney Colson's lives. And, you know, it was just great to experience all that with the Aces. But to hear Asia Wilson say, you know, I spoke with Dawn Staley today. You know, she called me or texted me or something and said, how you doing? Are you good? And she was like, you know, I have the bubble guts, but I'm good. Like, she was, everybody was nervous and everybody started laughing. She was like, don't laugh, because you guys had the bubble guts too. Everybody was nervous. You know, so your body is like freaking out. You saw what happened with Sabrina. She needed the trash can. It's like these moments are huge, right? And they work in your mind first. And you don't understand how hard that is to jump those mental hurdles while you're trying to be physically intact and mentally sound and focused. So that was a challenge that she most certainly mastered in the game. And for her just to come out and be as effective and efficient and to be able to sustain it for the entire game was amazing. And for me, it's always going to be about her reaching out to Cheryl Swoops and other savants. I think she reached out to Spoon too, Teresa Weatherspoon and other greats in the past in the WNBA. And someone asked her, like, what did they tell you? You know, and she said, just to go out there and get it done. And sometimes it's just that easy. Be you. And get the job done, right? And when she went out there and did it the way that she did it, and that turnaround fader, and Dawn was up, swelling up, I was screaming. I'm surprised I have a voice, because I was like on 11 with my yelling during that moment and others. But it was just so exciting. And to see that through Dawn's eyes, too, was really, for me, a thrill, knowing how much she loves them and how much she's a dream merchant for them. And she's right there.
How about those seats?
Coats too. Yeah, she was sitting right behind Becky, and she was leading.
Did Dawn pay for those seats? Did they get Dawn those seats? I want to know. I feel like they don't give away those seats. I feel like you got to pay for those. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, not that you can't afford it.
I was going to say she's good for it.
Yeah, she can afford it. I just like. I'm wondering. Did they give her the seats? Because whoever did that's really smart. I wonder if like if I was ESPN, I would have been like, hey Dawn, if you're coming anyways, right, we're gonna put you right here.
Follow the usher to. Seat 1A, right next to the bench. No, but it was so funny. And, you know, when she was like yelling, she was like, I can't get a technical for yelling at the refs. And she was most certainly involved in the game. And I thought it was so funny.
You can get a tech, though, just for the record. If you're a fan, you can get a tech.
Yeah, But I think she knew, like, she knew exactly. She told that line, like, you know, I have the three, you know, my three babies, when we were in the car, they were in the back of the SUV, whatever, in the truck. It's like, I'm not touching him or I'm not touching her. And it's like right here. That's exactly what Saul was doing. Like, you're like a centimeter away. So let's not. So, yeah. But I just thought it was awesome. I just thought she was fabulous. And I loved the fact that she was sitting down and sobbing, you know, mm-hmm. right after. And just the emotion of that moment. Knowing that she was disappointed with not being recognized as the MVP in the regular season. But, you know, I've as a coach, I felt that a lot, you know, and to win and cut the net is far greater than any certificate of MVP. You can keep that. I'm going to take the nets. That's what I told our kids.
Uh-oh. Christy went down momentarily. We're going to take a brief pause.
Sorry about that technical difficulty, but what I was saying is, you know, when I was coaching, I would say, you know, you can take the little certificate for MVP and Coach of the Year and all that stuff. Y'all can have it. We're undefeated, right? And we cut the net. So that's the proof right there when you win, right? You just win. And all that other stuff is fine, you know, and kudos when you get those certificates and, mm-hmm. and the crowns on your head for that. But the ultimate is when you go back in the gym and you see, you know, that banner that has the championship for your team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the individual accolades are fantastic. That's fun. I get it. You earn those, you know, whatever. And people have their own political thoughts about how that works on every level. I've seen it. Trust me. And I don't want to get all down that rabbit hole. But listen, it's a true thing. It's a true thing. But, you know, for Asia to sit down there and to just savor in that championship moment. I mean, she's not even thinking about, you know, being snubbed mm-hmm. in her mind, in a lot of other people's minds too, about not getting the MVP in the regular season. So for me, it was very special to see Dawn share that moment with her and Elena Coates as well from mm-hmm. South Carolina, but also to mm-hmm. see Asia kind of just full on feeling the emotion of that moment and just riding the wave of it and just reveling in that joy and the love of the game. You saw that just oozing out of her. And it was really special to watch.
It was incredibly cool moment to see her win last year. It's an incredibly cool moment to see her win this year. And it's all that work that they've put in, because you can clearly see how much this team has worked to get better since they all, you know, at least those three players. And that's something that was really kind of cool is like, you know, obviously you want to have Chelsea, you want to have Kia Stokes, you want to have your whole team around, but to do it with mainly the three players, at least in terms of the leaders coming into this game, the three players who were your number one picks, they got three number one picks back to back to back. Turns out they nailed all three of them.
Yeah.
And it turns out having all three of those number one picks has really helped them build one of the best teams in WNBA history, as we'll get into a little bit later, but it was really cool to see. It was those three. And you can see all the work that all three of them have put in since they got to the organization, both in terms of their own play on the court and making that organization into this winning behemoth that can do something like this, that can pull off a game like this. Even without, you know, the depth, although we can get into the depth. I just want to give you a chance to clear one thing up. Who'd you vote for MVP?
Say it one more time.
Who'd you vote for MVP?
I voted for Asia Wilson for MVP unapologetically. I just always, for me, everyone has their own thing, but for me, it's the best player on the best team, period. And for me, it was Asia Wilson and her consistent play all season long. And that's what I had. And I don't know who that fourth place voter was. It wasn't you, was it, Gabe?
I don't have a vote. Oh, I would have voted for Asia.
Okay, good.
I would have voted for Asia. And then I think I tried to find the fourth and fifth place, and I was just like, they're not the same. Like, there would have to be we would have to skip fourth place for the first three. But yeah, no, I would have voted for Asia. Absolutely. I don't know. I don't know who voted for her for fourth place, because that's insane.
That's crazy. I had Alyssa Thomas second, too. That was mine, because Alyssa was killing. And, you know, even with an injury to Breonna Jones, and it was almost like the same kind of adverse situation, she was able to maintain and sustain. But because Vegas was better.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all similar. They're all similar, and you can't. And the thing is, Asia does it as we mentioned, she does it on both ends. And the other thing I like about Asia, and this is kind of just a change in basketball, I think, in the last, like 4 years, is just kind of the return of the post.
Yes.
There's a return to the high post with bigs.
Yeah.
We're not back in the old days where everything goes down to the low post.
No,
but you look at this game. There was a lot of the sets worked again to the post, whether it was for Asia, whether it was for Alicia Clark sometimes, which is awesome. I love Alicia Clark.
Yeah, slipped her right down in front. Yeah.
Whether it was for Jonquel or Stewie, it was just a lot of post play.
Yeah.
And I think after so many years of everyone freaking out, it's five out. There's no centers. It's like, okay, now we're right back into get the ball into your big and let them work. That's what Asia did this entire season, last season, her whole career. And she's just doing it in such an electric way from the post. Like she's making it. It just looks cool. You know, she's doing stuff that we've seen that we saw when I was growing up and then kind of faded away in basketball for a while. And certainly in men's basketball. Now it's coming back where we have an Asia Wilson, where we have a Jonquel Jones, where we have a Jokic and Embiid, any of these guys that really do play through the post. And that's why I really just enjoyed watching her, get her touch at the elbow and go from the pinch post, because she is the best in the world at doing that. And she did it awesome. And on that step back jumper that won them the game, essentially. I don't remember if that was the go ahead. No, because Courtney hit one.
Yeah, but it was still a clutch bucket.
Yeah.
They needed that one. It may not have been a buzzer beater, but it was a momentum saver for Las Vegas. And it was crucial, too, because she had Stewie on her, who has, a 7-foot wingspan, whatever. And she was right there in her face, and it didn't matter. And it was beautiful. And her wrist, there was a slow-mo where the bounce of Asia's wrist was just, it was so soft and feathery, man. I loved it.
I feel like
it was textbook. Yeah.
She kind of changed up the timing of some of her stuff. She kind of made it a little bit faster, her release, and just like when she was pulling up, because she was getting blocked and contested more in that game three. The big reason why Vegas lost that game three was because of those contests coming from Jonquel and Stewie. So Asia just kind of sped up or stopped a little earlier on most of her moves and just pulled up from wherever she was.
Yeah.
And it gave her just enough space to score. And that was, as it turns out, their last bucket. That was the Aces last score of the game. So that was the game winning bucket.
It was clutch. And she also, like you said, from the elbow areas, they like to feed her there. That's just been typical in Las Vegas for Asia when Becky got there, right? Get her at the nail or the elbows and let her go to work. But for me, there was this one move. I think she's on the right-hand side. She's a lefty, okay? For those of you who don't know, okay? Everybody knows that, though. She's on the right elbow, and she did a little in and out. Bop, bop, bop. She did a pity pat, like, dee-dee-dee, and went to the rack with her right. I was like, oh, that was another moment that I almost lost my voice, because I was like, man, she went to her weak side. You know, that's her non-dominant hand, and she pity pat and got by. Like, she was just in another galaxy when it came to her execution and ability to attack and finish. And I thought that's what Vegas did well all game. All of them got to the rack. You saw Sydney Colson. She came in and attacked and got right to the glass. It was a pump fake. It was just basic basketball. It was a pump fake and get to the rim. And she got right to the cup and finished. So, I mean, it was just like the basics and the fundamentals, the culture and the philosophy and the discipline. And I think Becky Hammon said that too. I think it was pregame or maybe in one of those interviews, she was like, we just have to stay disciplined, down 10, down 12, whatever. They stayed disciplined. And they were like the duck, like I said, on top of the water, and those feet underneath were working, right? But on top, you see this. You don't see the work. You don't see the grind. You don't see the trench work that all the players put in mentally first, but physically, wow. I mean, it was really special to see that as well.
Well, I think the player who pretty much embodies all those qualities you just said is Alicia Clark.
Yes.
I mean, favorite on this podcast, favorite of everyone. I feel like I've never heard anyone say anything negative about Alicia Clark on court, off court. She is, just the way she plays is just incredible. I just love the way she plays it. And, in this game, it's kind of hard to overstate her impact, but when you look at the box score, you're not going to get it because she only had 10 points. She missed 1 3. That was the only three she took. If I told you Alicia Clark had a huge impact on the finals game, you'd say, well, she hit a few threes, right? Hit no threes. Uh-huh. But what she did do, she grabbed 4 offensive rebounds, most in the game, just as many as Jonquel Jones. Huge. And she played some of the best defense you're ever going to see.
She locked that down. She was locked in on defense. And,
I mean, helps that they've played against each other forever. You know, yeah, because they've been in practice. They've spent 9 years together.
Yeah, Seattle.
It might be a little less.
I think it's 8. Yeah, because then she came to DC.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years together in Seattle. Cut a few championships with Stewie. They play against each other every single day in practice. She knows what she wants to do, and they're that last possession for New York. They had 8 seconds left.
Oh,
sideline inbounds, and it was clearly going to go Stewart. So Alicia Clark gets her, and you know, I made a TikTok about this, about just everything she does perfect. She did everything perfect as a defender on that last play. Like, she sets up in great position. She's down in her stance, but not too low. Her chest is up. Her face is up. She's looking at the player. Her hands are out. She's getting around the screen. She's making contact. She's holding on to contact, but not too hard because she's going to get that foul call. And she kind of fouled Stewie on the catch. Yeah. But whatever, it's fine. It's the catch. They're not going to call on the catch for the most part. 8 seconds left. She made the catch difficult. Stewie tried to go to her over her left shoulder to the right, which is where she likes to get her shot.
Yeah.
And Alicia just sat there like a stone wall, took the contact to the chest, forced her back to the middle where there was help. Jackie Young helps at the perfect time. And then on the backside of that, Christy, what'd she do on the backside of that play once Courtney Vandersloot gets her shot up?
She wedged JJ underneath the rim, honey, and that was the game saver. She boxed out. She boxed out, and it wasn't even, you know, had she not, what would JJ have done, Gabe? She would have tipped it in, man. She was right there. She's 6'6". She had a height advantage, and then the shot was long, and it came right to where JJ would have been had Alicia Clark. I'm tired. Listen, Clark wedged her underneath the basket. At that time, wow, that was a big glitch for me. I saw Alyssa Thomas. I'm sorry. No,
we were talking about Alyssa.
No. And look, AC knows what it is. Okay, she is so smart with what she does on the court. She's a vet, and she even said it in the post game interview. She just said, "You know, I've been here before. Mm-hmm. This is not new to me. I know what it takes. I have the championship medal. You know, and medal. What I mean, heart and understanding, not." Metal, physical metal, but
ETLE.
Thank you. But with that, I just thought in that moment, like all the things that she did on that play. I mean, I think the entire team, Jackie Young, when she blitzed over to take that drive or the possibility of a drive away from Stewie as she was trying to get into the paint a little deeper on Clark, and she took that away by blitzing over to the basket line. And you know, I thought that was a big part of that play as well. And then I thought Lainey was going to pull. She should have. And it looked like, to me, offensively, now I'm speaking obviously, but it looked like Sabrina wanted that ball because she knew that it looked like Clark had Stewie covered pretty tough. So when she caught it and she was uncomfortable after she caught it, you could see Sabrina kind of move over like, I'm right here if you need it. And then Lainey was kind of lifting on that weak side to get into the vision of Stewie if she needed to, you know, skip pass. But I think Sloot rushed it, you know, but she had to because the time was going. The time was going, man. She had to lift it. And she had been so good all game, man. Sloot had probably best game of the series for her.
Best game of her. I think best game of the season for her, to be honest.
I was going to say, I didn't want to take a wide, big picture, but definitely – one of her best performances in a New York uniform for sure, where she had 19 and, you know, she was knocking in those threes on those paint threes and those kickouts and skip passes and duh. Yeah. But Alicia Clark, man, I'm telling you what, she's a game saver and a 1 point game. We're talking a 1 point game. So maybe she didn't knock in any threes or whatever, but she had 10 points. I mean, if she had 8, they lose. Right. So it's like, there are no such thing as little things. There's all things are all encompassing and all of them are big things. And so for Alicia Clark to go out there and do what she does, especially with a heavy heart. And that was hard to watch, you know, because I lost my dad too. And so, and when she lost her dad, it was pretty fresh for me. It's still fresh for me, but I definitely reached out to her personally. And, you know, because you don't understand it until you go through it. So we kind of have that as a bond a little bit. Like we went back and forth right after that happened. She was, you know, just made aware of it. So it was really hard to listen to that, but to know that she was able to play through that heartache, there's just no cure for it other than, you know, represent the generational love that he placed in her heart for the game. So I'm just proud of her in that way, because I know the struggle of that. That's a daily thing. The waves are heavy. And for her to be able to perform the way that she did for him was really sweet.
Yeah, it was special. And I mean, she's a special person all around. And really, you know, it's been it wasn't the last 3 years that I think that Alicia wanted, right? Like her last year in Seattle was in the bubble. That's really, and that was really difficult. Then her first year in Washington, she gets hurt.
I know.
Her second year in Washington, it's just not quite coming together. Pete's still dealing with injuries, people up and down. So then now she comes here to Vegas and, you know, they still have to deal with the injuries. They still have to deal with all that adversity. Obviously, she's still dealing with the loss of her father. And for her to go through all of that and then come out with another championship in which she had such a major role.
Yeah.
It cannot be overstated. They do not win this game without her. No. Not just on that last play. That last play was just emblematic of what she did throughout the game. She did so many things.
She did.
And for her to have her fingerprints all over this game, like she always does, when the matters the most, she's going to have her fingerprints on the game.
Yeah.
I just thought it was perfect and beautiful, and it was very emotional. I'm just very happy for her. I want to mention some other aces, because we should talk about the Liberty for a little bit, even though it's going to be more sad. We got to mention Jackie Young. I mean, this is now, I don't know where we rank Jackie Young in terms of like the best players in the league, but it's not low. It's certainly up near the top, because every game in these playoffs, pretty much she's just been rock solid doing everything she does, playing great defense, you know, getting out in transition, hitting threes, playing a really, really tremendous brand of basketball. And she's the person who has been very steady recently for them in the playoffs. I just think she deserves a ton of credit for how much better she's gotten since she's gone to Vegas and the player she is now. And it's like, I don't know if you're looking at, I'm not sure what the ceiling is for Jackie Young, because it continues to get higher. And I'm guessing there's just not one. There's just not a ceiling at this point.
It's not a ceiling for her. No. I mean, she's phenomenal. I mean, she's a dog, right? And, you know, her countenance may be kind of under the radar. Mm-hmm. She's not going to, you know, be wolfing or doing any, a lot. I saw her swell up in one of the playoff games, but other than that, I don't think I've seen a lot, much of her. And that's not right or wrong. That's who she is. But what she is going to do, she's going to dissect you and she's going to attack you and she's going to finish with contact on you. She's going to make shots in your face and not care about it and go the other way and not change her facial expression whatsoever, because it's all internal with Jackie Young. And I'm going to tell you what, she is so underrated, because we were talking about it just right there. You said, where would she be ranked in the tops in terms of players in the league? And God, is her name mentioned ever in that debate? Across
she's
the
all
league?
Did she make all W? She made all WNBA, right? I'm not tripping.
There weren't a lot of guards on that.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, Jewel Lloyd made second team, which I don't know about that. She led.
So we got Jackie's second team.
Okay.
Yeah, Jackie's second team. So
I mean,
sure. I don't know if she's second team. Although Chelsea Gray is also second team. It's a regular season award. That's what you know. We need all playoff teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although then it would just end up being the team who won the championship.
I guess, you know, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, for Jackie Young, I still think there's not enough reverence for her consistency. We're talking about, I mean, that's a huge word for me. I don't care. I don't care if it's basketball or anything else, like your work life, your home life, like whatever. Be consistent, right? Don't breadcrumb people. Like, just, oh, this is me today. And then, you know, 2 weeks from now, that's me again. But then what happened in between? Like, you need to be the same person. And that's the challenge of being great, right? That's the challenge of being a real one. That's being a real one, being consistent. Being consistent is real. So for her to be able to come out and do what she did night in, night out. And game three, she didn't really play that well. I get it, you know, but they changed the matchups. Which, you know, we were talking about that, like New York couldn't go into game three doing the same thing. And boy, they didn't. They went different matchups on that. But then Vegas had to go different. They were forced to have different matchups in game four. So, but I just think with Jackie Young, she's a special. And another young player, number one pick, right, coming in. So, I mean, she has a tremendous upside, but no ceiling. Like, let's not even put ceilings or limits because – there, I don't think for her there's any such thing. And I love also, this is my last thing about Jackie, but just after the game, the post-game thing, she said that, I forgot the person's name, but she was working with a specific shooting coach or a trainer to change a little bit of her shot mechanics. And she said it made a big difference for her. So, you know, you put that extra work in, nobody sees that part. I mean, we go into practices and stuff like that, but I mean, we don't see everything as media people, right? They may have sessions and they're in the gym at midnight maybe, and they're working on timing of their lift and stuff like that. Nobody sees that stuff and how hard these players work to get right, okay? And whether that's getting healthy, right? I know Elena Deladon comes in 3 hours ahead of games and leaves 2 hours after. So there's like stuff that we don't see. So the work that Jackie Young has put in to perfect her game, even during the season this year, I mean, it's remarkable. And, you know, it needs to be discussed more, the underbelly of what these professional athletes go through to get right and to be at their best at all times and to help them be consistent.
Well, and the lack of ego, we should move on to the play. But just like a lack of ego, because like a lot of players, I mean, I'm sure in every level, think their jump shot is their jump shot. And it's hard to change it. And it's hard to do, it's hard to A, do the mental gymnastics to change it in for yourself. And then B, it's hard to just want to do it, to actually buy into those types of changes. And it's extremely clear that she has made a lot of changes to her jump shot since she was in college at Notre Dame. Not, she wasn't like a bad jump shooter, but it certainly wasn't a strength. It wasn't the thing that was her calling card as much as it is now, where she is arguably the best three-point shooter in the WNBA at the moment. And so to go from, you know, not thought of as really a shooter to being the best one, that just shows how much work she's put in. And, you know, you could just clearly see it. And that's the theme with all of them. We're not mentioning Kelsey Plum because she didn't have a big game, but again, they don't get here without Kelsey Plum either. No. And she's done everything that they've asked for and taken a step back from her role, certainly in college and from what she thought she was going to be when she came into this organization to be what she is now, which is a two-time champion and one of the best guards in the league. And we will have another shirt like this.
She's a killer in that shirt. Let me see it. Put it up again. Oh, killer. Get it.
Great. It's a great look. It's a great look, Kelsey. I want to, all right, we got to mention two more people for the Aces.
Okay.
Because these were two cats that I did not see contributing to the series before we got here.
Okay.
They had to step up for the injured Chelsea Gray and Kia Stokes. That'd be Sydney Colson and Kayla George. Kayla, the numbers don't look good. Okay.
Yeah,
4 of 14 from the field, 3 of 10 from three. But she was told that she was going to be left open. And she was told that if she is left open, you shoot the ball.
I had that sucker.
And she did it.
She did that.
And if she made, like you, like Chrissy said before we got on, if she only makes 2 of the 10 threes, they lose this game. She needs to make all 3 of the ones she made. And the fact that she took 10 of them shows that she had confidence enough to do it. And that is an accomplishment in itself for a basketball team. And then you mentioned Sydney Colson.
Yeah.
Played 14 minutes in this game. She only had the one bucket and one assist. The plus minus, the player who had the best plus minus. And so the player who the Aces outscored the opponent by the most with on the floor was Sydney Colson. She was plus 17 in this game.
Let's go.
She was come on the court.
17 look, plus 17.
Causation is not correlation, but she was on the court when the Aces were kicking butt.
Yeah.
That's all we have. Yeah. I don't know about causation. We can go back into the tape and look for more for that. But she was on the court when the Aces were kicking butt. And yeah. I mean, Kayla had her ups and downs, but she played her role. Sydney played her role. And you can't ask for more than what they gave you in a decisive championship game.
Yeah.
After not really playing in the series, I'm not sure. Like maybe some garbage time minutes.
Not significant.
Not real minutes throughout the series. Probably not real minutes in the past, month and a half?
Yeah.
And just to come in and hey, say, hey, I'm going to do whatever I'm being told to do at the moment and do it to the best of my abilities. And Sydney was like, I'm going to foul somebody. I got six of these suckers.
She had five.
She committed like 10.
She really did, though.
She committed like 10 fouls, but she got called for five. And that is like, oh, I love it.
Oh, my God.
Look, coach, I don't have much, but I got six fouls.
Hey.
And I just wanted to give them a ton of credit because I was very impressed by their efforts in this game. And it was amazing that they pulled this off together.
Yeah. No, I heard Becky Hammon say that Kayla George knew that she had to, you know, pick her game up and it would be relied upon. And she was in the gym lifting weights. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, maybe psychologically that helped her. But I mean, at that juncture, you know, the day before the game, I don't know if, you know, a couple barbells are going to get you.
Just gets the adrenaline going.
Get you ready. I don't know. But maybe psychologically, you know, she just knew, like, I'm doing everything. Like you said, I'm doing everything I can, you know, to help this team. And whether it's get into the weight room a little extra, like normally she probably wouldn't have done that. But just to get in there and psychologically be present with giving extra, right? And that's what she had to do on the court. She had to give extra. And for her to be, I think, one of six from three in the first half, that was a little concerning. And I was a bit alarmed by that. And they were down 9-10 points. And I was like, oh gosh. And she's taking these shots and they were long rebounds because they were long shots. So they weren't really getting second chance opportunities. So New York was getting the ball and going the other way and they were cashing out. And I was like, okay, you know, trust the process. And I think we heard Becky Hammon say that too along the way in the game. Hey, it might not be smooth right now. We've got to trust the process. We're doing the right thing. And then, you know, I'm watching the game, you know, my son, Jordan, and she was open at the top. And I think she missed like two or three threes in a row, like wide open at the top. And I was like, you got to take that shot though, right, Jordan? Like, you got to take that shot. And he's like, yeah, but the rebounds are coming out. And I'm like, yeah, you know, so there was like the little, you know, happy.
That's a star player answer right there. Like, you know, no, don't take that shot. Let me take that shot.
But we were, you know, we were debating about that. And I'm like, well, the swing wasn't there because the defense had, you know, they were drop coverage. I don't know. So it was really special to see her knock in a couple when they needed it, but they were riding that momentum too. But they got a couple buckets. I think Clark had taken some dart cuts inside and got that weak side. She got to her right hand and barely caught it, but had all 10 fingernails in that bad boy and got it up there on the right side and finished. That was a big bucket too in that stretch where Las Vegas took the lead. So I think when you have a player like Sydney Colson who can come into the game too and have that behind the back pass that I was screaming.
That was someone else, Sydney.
Oh, I'm screaming. What did you want to
talk about confidence?
What did you think when she did that?
I mean, it's very on brand, first off. Like, I was surprised for like a second. I was like, wait, this is Sydney Colson. Like, this is, if I had to pick any player who hasn't played throughout the entire series to come in and throw a behind the back pass the moment they get in, it's her. But it was on the money.
It was on the money. I wish the shot would have gone down. I mean, whoever got it got fouled, but it was like, oh, and the slow mo was even that much more sweet. Like, she just wrapped it up.
That was a huge play. Now that I'm looking at my notes, that was a behind the back to Clark who got fouled, and that's what got them the lead at the end of the third quarter.
There you go. See?
Huge, but so not just to just come in after not playing in the series and do that in a massive moment,
massive,
huge, like game changing moment where your team's making a run, and if you throw that thing and it just goes out of bounds, you're on the bench.
Problems. Yeah,
you're on the bench. I don't care how funny you are, but It went right into her hand. She knew what she was doing. I mean, I'm sure she practices that often. And it worked out. But wow, the guts, the absolute guts to do.
Guts is a great word. Yeah, it was. That was all the money too, man. Right in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But you know, she came in and did what she had to do, and you know, that bucket that she got and that pass. But then, you know, it was their defense too. I think she was part of that. But they were on a string on defense, and you can't. You can't scout against chemistry and heart and grit. Like, those things are intangible. Like, you can't. It's not schematic. It was attitudinal. And that's how the Aces won that game. I mean, they did it with their heart. And they did it with their belief in one another, regardless of who was playing or not. You know, it didn't matter the name on the back. It mattered on the front. And you could tell that's how they played that game and won the way they did.
Absolutely. And then I guess that on the flip side of the coin, let's talk about New York.
Flip side.
I mean, it's not like a lack of grit. I think they got outgritted. New York did. To what you said earlier in the podcast about New York, not having a chance to scheme for this, not having a chance to understand it. Cause they're a team that really does like to run a lot of sets.
Yeah.
I think in game three, they really got back to that identity of running sets to get back into the post. And they had people to attack. And I think in this game, their plan was to attack Kayla George. Worked for a little bit. But I think the Aces also did a lot to, you know, help out, to stunt, to peel switch, to talk. They were just very communicative and moving and scrambling on defense that kind of didn't allow the Liberty to get into many set actions.
Right.
So I think that cost them. I think New York also let the pace get a little out of. I think the pace was favoring Vegas. I think maybe it was. I don't remember who said it on the broadcast, but someone was like, "Oh, this pace is favoring New York because they're the team with more players." And in my mind, I was like, "No, you don't want to work hard on offense, you know, because you're going to have to work hard on defense. That you need to make these offensive possessions as short as possible, and that's what they did early."
Yeah.
I think New York did not do a good enough job of slowing the game down in that sense. Do you know the points in the paint?
I do not know the points in the paint. What was that?
New York 24, Las Vegas 44.
Wow. It felt like they were more intentional at getting in there and not just to Asia Wilson or to Clark, but I just thought they were getting downhill. They were attacking. Wow. 20 plus 20?
Plus 20.
In the mud.
Well, I guess talking about New York, minus 20 in the paint. When you have Jonquel Jones and you have Brandon Stewart, I mean, a lot of that credit goes to Vegas.
Yeah.
New York. I don't know. I have to watch the tape again really to get into it. But from what we saw last night, it was just Jonquel got bottled up. Yeah. Perhaps need to be a little bit more insistent for the ball.
Maybe.
Perhaps need a little bit be just to demand the ball more, although they were really doubling her.
They were.
And then I don't want to lay this all at her feet, but it was one of the worst games I think we've ever seen Brianna Stewart play.
Oh, she just couldn't get going.
In the finals, I got the stats here. 10 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. That's fine for like a normal player, not Brianna Stewart. 3 of 17 from the field.
Ouch.
Just to put it into context, she was outscored by Kayla George in this game.
Boo, 3 of 17. Gosh. And the thing about it, it wasn't like she was taking shots outside of what she's capable of executing and knocking in. And we know she's human. She's not going to be 17 of 17. Okay, so let's be real. But she could be 10 of 17. How about 4 of 17 and they win? Like by one.
How about she hits that wide open 3 that we talked about before we got on? In the fourth quarter, I could not have been more wide open. The Red Sea parted. There was no one in front of her, and she just was off balance when she caught it, and it didn't go in.
Shot slow. I thought she shot that slow. And sometimes when you're wide open like that, it does change your speed of lift. And I thought it was slow on that because she thought she had time. And then she was being careful because she hadn't been making shots, so she was trying to let me get myself together. And that's how you miss out, too. You have to stay in rhythm. You have to stay in rhythm. And it's easier said after the fact. And I get that. And she knows this. I'm not trying to coach Brianna Stewart. But at the same time, I observe that, right? When she was wide open, like you can still be in your shot rhythm when you're wide open. You don't want to be like, take a beat on the catch. and then get into your mechanics and shoot it, because then now your whole rhythm is herky jerky. Like, you just take the shot, like get the ball and shoot it, like stay in your rhythm. The hesitation killed her on that particular shot. But, you know, with JJ only getting 8 touches all game, that to me is the bigger concern, because wow, we'll never know. Like, at least they went to Stewie, even on the last play, they went to her 17 times. And they just stayed going to her. And I get that to a certain extent. But at what point do you say, hey, let's get back down in there, right? We're being outscored by 20 in the lane. Let's even that up a little bit and take the higher percentage shot with freaking JJ down in there, who has been dominating. And to me, obviously, well, to me and to everyone else in the Commissioner's Cup game, was the MVP of that game, because they went to the well.
And game 3, they won because of her.
Because of her. But then what happened? And then, okay, you don't even have Stokes out there. But Clark, you know, is in there trying to, you know, battle a little bit on some cross matches. But, you know, she had Stewie most times. But, you know, sometimes she found herself down in there tangled up with JJ a little bit. But I don't know. Like, I feel bad for JJ. Like, it's just, like, if I go 3-for-17, I'm going to feel bad. Cause I'm like, dang, I'm better than that.
I feel bad for me.
I'm feeling it, right? But then if I'm JJ and I go, what was JJ for 8?
She was 3-for-8.
Yeah, I'm mad at that. I'm mad about that. Cause I didn't even get to chew all my food. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like,
and I think
opportunity. Right.
She played 33 minutes in this game, and she had to sit down with some foul trouble, which I thought, honestly, New York could not afford that. No. I think that was a tactical mistake of pulling her out 2 fouls. She needs to be in there.
Yeah.
We saw what Sydney Colson was able to get away with when she had 5 fouls. I guarantee you they're letting John Cole get away with more.
It was physical.
It was really, really physical. And so, like,
that block on Plum.
Yes.
Not foul. But it was, I mean, she blocked it, but then she got into her back.
That's one of those things that's too cool to be called a foul.
I know.
That's too sick. Just let it happen. No, but so with JJ, I got to go back, but you have to think, one of the things that you should have been coming into this game with the idea of doing was, we're going to pound into the post with JJ. And if she has Asia Wilson on her, she's going to draw a foul on Asia Wilson. And she's going to get Asia Wilson tired. And the only thing JJ has to do, JJ can miss 20 shots.
Thank you.
If she gets 2 fouls picked up on Asia Wilson and makes Asia Wilson so tired that she can only score, which she scored 24 points. If she can only score 18 points,
they win.
On the other end and only get maybe 13 rebounds.
Yeah.
New York wins this game.
Difference.
And so I don't know if that's if that was a thing that New York came into this game saying, and we need to feed the post specifically to JJ, and they just couldn't get it done.
Right.
I didn't see enough in this game to say what happened.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like that was the push there.
No.
And I think to a certain extent, New York got a little too cute in this game. They won game 3. They won game 3. And they're like, well, the aces are going to change because they'll have Chelsea. They're changing. So we got to change too. It's like, no.
Oh yeah.
Just stay with what you're doing. Just stay with what was working. And I think, you know, missing shots really hurts. Not revealing any secrets of basketball there. Missing shots hurts. It makes everything harder to do. I just think there was, as you do too, there had to be more of a focus on getting Jonquel the ball in the post specifically so she could work against Asia, regardless of the outcome of those plays. She could get blocked 10 times.
Absolutely.
But at least she's making Asia work. And I don't think they made Asia work enough defensively.
No, agreed. 1,000%. And even if JJ didn't shoot it, right? The defense is going to morph to how she moves when she catches it, right? When they're going to double, where the angle of the double team or the shade is going to come her way, right? Are they going to dig? But they didn't really test that enough. And I think that would have opened up more opportunities for Sloot, right? Who was hitting those shots on kickouts. So the spacing, and you heard this from Becky Hammon, she said, you know, we wanted to give the ball to Asia and space out around her and spray out passes if we need to from three. So they started inside out, which is why they were plus 20. Okay. So the intentionality of doing that was a massive difference in this game. Okay. At 1 point win. Okay. To put that out there again. But on the other side, what happened to that notion with JJ down in there, who was dominating in game three in the paint, and you got to get her to the ball. And it's not for her to shoot it every time, but it's to space the floor for everyone else. And Becky was saying, hey, we're going to give it to Asia and then take cuts off of her. And then now you see Clark diving down. Mm-hmm. Now you see, you know, kickouts being made because of the defense getting to Asia, right? Now somebody else is open. So they just didn't test that enough either. So they didn't test Asia Wilson defensively, but they also didn't test the collective effort of the Aces defensively by putting the ball in there and seeing what they could create off the ball. And maybe for her, okay? But I wanted to see more. What are the Aces going to do when she catches it? Where are they doubling from? And how are they lifting? How are they rising to get the ball, right?
Which, and New York did not do that.
Like, send it out.
New York didn't do that, though, this entire series. They've really struggled against those digs, the guards coming down on the post. So maybe there is some logic to the idea of, like, we're not just going to try to dump it in and double, but they don't cut enough either. Like, you didn't figure it out. And I think that is very, very frustrating. I think it's extremely frustrating to see Breanna Stewart have a bad game, but, like, she had a bad playoffs. I mean,
she did.
If we really want to get into it, it was a mistake to, you know, put this game in her hands, frankly. I think this game should have been in, because you look at the stats. Okay. So Breanna Stewart has played in 1, 2, 3, 4 playoffs with multiple games. Okay. She's won championships in 3 of those seasons. She did not only play one game in 2017. Am I tripping? I don't know.
2017?
2017.
Was she injured? No, she wasn't injured that year.
No, she won 2018, 2020 with, yeah, okay. So she won 2 championships in this match. All right, that's the point. This, so in the past 3 playoffs with multiple games, she shot 46% from the field in 2018, 53.8% from the field in 2020, 2 championship years, 51.3% from the field in 2022.
Dang.
From 3 in those 3 seasons, in 2018, 41.7%. In 2020, 50% from 3 in the playoffs. 52% from 3 in 2022. From 3, sorry. 52% from 3. This season, her field goal percentage was 35.8.
Wow.
In the playoffs. Her 3-point shooting percentage was 19.6.
19.6. Wow.
This was her worst playoffs, and it's not close. No. And so it does. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Because I'm with you. Like, you have to let Breanna Stewart take a lot of shots, but there had to be an answer. There had to be more. The answer had to involve more JJ shots, too. If JJ misses a bunch of shots and you lose this game, too. I don't really have many things that you could have done differently.
No. And I'm fine with that. You know what? It's every game is different. Like, I don't care. And you know this now because you're coaching. So you're going to feel all of this. Okay. You're going to go into a game. You're going to be up all night watching film and you're going to have like all these games you're watching. Teams play them different ways. They're zoning, they're pressing. They have this lineup, they have that lineup. Boom, 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 boom. So you're comparing, contrasting, looking at stats, all of it. Okay. You get into the game and all that's out the window because of how the game is flowing. Like, are your kids making shots? Okay. Who, and of those kids, who's making the most shots? Yeah. Okay. So guess what? We're going to that kid. And okay. Somebody may have MVP stamped on their forehead, but guess what? She's not hitting today. Okay. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go to the one who's hitting shots. Period. And if the MVP person is upset with that, so be it. We're winning. Because I'm going with the flow. Like, you have to go with how the game is flowing. And I'm not, and for the New York people, Dano, all y'all, okay, I am not trying to overcoach Sandy Brondello's decisions. I am just saying, in instances where that has happened to me as a coach, I'm going to go with who's making shots, not to the accoladed person who should be making them, but she's not. Okay. She should be making them, Gabe. And I get it, but she wasn't. So for me, I'm going inside to JJ on that last play for some kind of lob. I don't know, a misdirection or some kind of action to get her an easy touch in the paint where all she has to do is catch and shoot. I mean, they could have done even a basic like screen away and see if they switch it or whatever, but then have her sit like right at the bucket. Like, don't even come to the lane line. Like, go ahead and set that screen and come across and sit right there. Here's the basket. Sit right here. Send that thing in. All you have to do is shoot and lay it. Like, there are ways around stardom. Yeah. There are ways around stardom. And your expectations sometimes outweigh your statistical production. And I think that's what happened on that last play in particular. Because...
yeah.
Would you have gone to Stewie with the 8.8 left? And to have her catch it where she caught it and try to make a play with Clark blanketing her with tremendous defense.
Yeah.
You would still probably go to her. You would still go to Stewie.
I mean, for one, I think you got, to a certain extent, you got to dance with the one who brought you.
Really? Well, and that's not JJ my who brought him. JJ brought him.
Yeah, but Stewart.
JJ kept his feet.
Yeah, but Stewart carried them for a lot of the regular season. Okay. I just think it's also easier. The problem is, it's easier to get Brianna a touch there than it is to get JJ a touch because you gotta get it in the post.
No, I don't think so.
I think it's way easier to get a perimeter touch from the sideline out of bounds than a post touch.
Oh man, I don't agree, and I hear you. But there, I have like four plays just ran in my head where I could get JJ.
Oh yeah, yeah. But then I'm sure like we said with Alicia Clark and her defensive efforts on that last play, you know.
So why would you go to
someone else? Asia, the defensive player of the year, is the person you would have been going up against if you're going to Jonquel on that play.
But game.
So it's gonna be harder for her to get open. You risk the 5 second violation, and then you're kind of sitting there, and she has to post up. She gets caught. You know, there's a lot. I think I don't love what they got on that last play. I think there may have been a missing element if I was listening to Sandy's timeout correctly. I think they missed something. I don't know which part of it was, but I remember there was like a third thing to do, but I think maybe it was called off because Stewie was going to try to get that shot on the right hand side. But there was another plan that was like, okay, Stewie, if you don't go one-on-one, we have this coming up. So to a certain extent, it's Stewart's choice as well. And I just think she got a lot of those shots in the flow of the game, and that's the way they were playing offense in this game.
Yeah.
To your point, you got to call plays for Jonquel. What it doesn't have to be the last play of the game.
True.
But as a post,
you're on the rock. Yeah.
As a post, you can't get the ball by yourself for the most part.
Thank you.
You can only do an offensive rebound, which doesn't happen that often. But as a post, you cannot get the ball by yourself in the spot that you want it. So you need someone to get you a ball, and I think there just needs to be.
Yeah,
it has to be a lot more set plays, especially when you're playing at the professional level, to get the ball into the post. It's extremely difficult to get the ball down there. It's just really hard. So you got to have a very set schedule to do it. And I think they did it in game three. They didn't do it in game four. They were okay taking those perimeter shots, and it bit him in the butt. But in terms of the last play, to your point on the last play, yes, I would love to go to JJ.
Okay.
I trust a lot more getting a decent shot out of the play that they ran.
Okay. I hear you, and I disagree only because of how the game was unfolding, and everyone knew kind of it was going to go to Stewie. Clark knew it was going to Stewie. Clark knows Stewie.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about, every little nuance, she knows all the hairs on her head, like where they're positioned, like she knows everything. So for me, I didn't really like that choice because now I'm thinking, on the previous play that the Aces had, sideline, inbound, lob to Asia. And she caught it, even though it was muddy. And she got, three people got a piece of her on that. And whether it was on the ball or not, it's, you're not going to call that. But she got that catch. So there are opportunities, even in a crowded space. I mean, I don't know.
Well, here's another thing I just thought of, actually.
I would get it to JJ.
They were down one with 8 seconds left. You want to take the last shot there. You don't want to make something and then have to, and you don't have no timeouts. So really, this is the last possession.
Yeah.
So this is the last possession because you have no timeouts. Because you don't want to. You don't want to have to foul and go down there because then the game's over. This is the last possession. Yeah. So you're down one. So you hit anything in the game and you win the game.
Anything.
And third, there's 8 seconds left, which is an awkward time. If there's 4 seconds left. Or like the Aces had on that last play. This is what triggered this. The Aces had 3 seconds on the shot clock in that last play. So that lob was like, okay, we have to do this.
Have to, yeah.
And it somehow worked. But on this play, you do kind of need to waste, you know, maybe 4 seconds there or go 3 seconds. And big part, thanks to Alicia Clark, she did. You did need to waste a little bit of time. So it's not like you could just like toss it up to JJ. There you need, but then maybe that goes back to your point of like, hey, maybe we do have enough time to run like a cross screen or like, you know, something.
And get it to somebody, maybe not directly into her. I understand
the
court situation there, or maybe just have somewhere, you know, fake a pin down, pop up, you know, get a misdirection, sending somebody opposite to take the help away, and then match that angle and send it in. And that'll take a couple seconds off. And then maybe you get fouled too because you're taking it down in there, and you just get into the body, and just take it. I don't know. Like for me, I just and for Stewie not to take the shot.
Yeah.
And I know she was thwarted by Clark.
But made the right play.
But take that shot. Take that. It's coming to you now. You're throwing a grenade with the pin out to Lainey.
Yeah, but that was the right play.
I know, but what, for her not to take it?
For her to kick out there, yeah. Because she didn't have, I mean, it was just a great double team. Really came at the perfect time where she was like, if that double team comes a second earlier, it's a much easier stop and examine the floor. If that double team comes a second later, it's a shot for Stewart. I thought that double team from Jackie prevented that shot. The one where she's coming back to the free throw line.
Yeah.
Because I think she also could have just... On the other side of the floor, it would have been a tough shot just because of how good the defense was. She could have pulled up over Alicia, and then maybe you give yourself the chance for an offensive rebound because you know your players are crashing and their players are kind of really locked in. Maybe that's the shot. If there's a shot there for her, it's on that side of the court, on the right side of the court.
On the right side.
Where she was trying to get to originally.
Yeah.
That's where that shot was. I think once she's come back to the middle, though, it was like,
that's a wrap.
That's toughy. That's a tough, because that's not where she wants. That's not the way she wants to be going.
No. Yeah. Could she have spun back to her right and with the long arms try to get to the rack? Like, keep the dribble, and you're testing it because you see Jackie Young's like stunting right there. Like, if I go here, I'm going to lose my dribble. You have the dribble still at that point, right? Before Jackie made her pick it up and kick it to Lainey. Mm-hmm. But you still have your dribble. You can kind of calculate what the defense is going to read or what they're going to do. And then maybe just keep it and try to spin back and go. You have like 4 seconds at that point. 5, 4, 3. Like you gotta go. And then now what kind of quality shot are you gonna get on a kick? And then an extra pass?
It was a wide open corner three.
Which I think she thought she had less time than she did. She chucked it.
My other theory was she looked in the post and she saw Jonquel and she was like, ooh, should I pass it? And she decided to shoot it because she was open. And the other thing that came up in my mind here was Sloot was having a great first half, and she put them in charge in that first half. That third quarter, she passed up a lot of threes.
She did.
So I'm guessing someone was in there saying, you got to shoot the ball if you're open, because she did. And on the previous possession, she shot the ball when she was open. So I don't mind the shot that they got. I don't mind that shot. It was just, like you're saying, very rushed. And the thing about physical defense, good physical defense, is it rushes the entire offense.
Speed you up.
Because you can't sit there as Brianna Stewart and say, oh, maybe I can spin back. No, because Alicia Clark is breathing on my neck, pushing me, has her chest into me. She's showing the hand. She's talking. She's saying you know, I'm sure, I mean, I'm guessing Alicia Clark is the type of defender who's just going to yell in your ear no matter what's happening. So she said, she's right there, and it just makes you feel like, you know, like claustrophobic almost.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I have to get out of here. I got to do something to just not have the ball anymore.
Yeah.
And then that double team comes and gives you the great opportunity to kick out. But it was, just really, that defense was perfect. I think the play call, to your point, probably would have gone with something different.
You need a screen, like some kind of a screen or even a ball screen, like when Stewie got it, just to clear a path. And maybe from who was guarding Sabrina? Who was guarding Sabrina?
It must have been Plum.
It must have been Plum. So how about that? How about Sab sets a screen on ball on the catch and lets her go, you know, see how they play that on a short area, like it right there in the slot.
Sydney Colson was on. Ooh, yeah, you got
on Sab.
Yeah.
Oh.
You gotta go there.
You gotta go there.
No offense to Sydney Colson.
I love Sid. We were at 51. Ooh, hey girl, hey. That's my dog, man. Yeah. I don't know. Could you force a cross match right there? And I mean, with 8.8, and you were talking about it too, the time and score, like you don't want to score immediately. So how about one screen to free her an avenue to attempt to get a cross match and possibly a foul, or at least to the free throw line. And if she misses both free throws, my God, like, what do you do? But what if she makes one or both?
Well, and so, and to your point, they actually, the last game, which was not as close at the end, but the kind of dagger three by Sabrina at the end of the game was off a Jonquel Stewie pick and roll on that side of the floor.
Yeah,
on that
short side roll. Of the floor. They did. They short rolled it.
And so I think that may have been the play there, but they had also had that play blown up a few times in this one. They those did. Pick and rolls. I don't know. I you gotta make shots, unfortunately, in basketball. And unfortunately, Brianna Stewart did not make enough shots in this postseason. And no. It's not gonna be all on her. It shouldn't be all on her, and it's not.
No,
but she's a superstar. And I think it's very fair to say that, you know, when she didn't have her, if your superstar is not having their best game, very hard for you to win in the playoffs, pretty impossible to win in the finals. If your best player is not having their best game. And this isn't like a Stewie isn't clutch thing. We've seen her win, you know, multiple championships.
She's a killer.
It was a different experience, certainly with Stewie, than we are used to in the finals.
But
I got one more question for you, because we're at an hour and 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, what was it?
And we have to talk about a couple other things, like Iowa playing in a football stadium. Although maybe we'll save that for next week, and we could do our Big Ten ACC preview,
which is
just a Maryland preview.
I mean,
because they straddle out the both conference. And then we also have to eventually talk about the Phoenix Mercury hiring Orlando Magic assistant Nate Tibbetts.
Yeah,
and some weird stuff.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
So we're not talking about that right now, or are we digging into that right now? No.
Do you want – all right, I got one quick question.
I know we're tight on time, and I know the limit. So maybe we'll save it. We'll save
let's,
it. But
let's see how fast we talk about this. I got a question. Are the Aces the best team ever?
Wow, ever in the history of the WNBA.
Yes, I have some facts. Some facts.
I'm thinking Comets. I'm thinking LA Sparks. I'm thinking repeat winners, obviously. And then Minnesota Lynx, who won kind of every other year. Seemed like all the odd years there. 11.
It was, 20,
all the way to 2013,
15, or no, 11, right?
11,
13, 15,
17. Yeah. So, I mean, every other year they won it on a stretch. So, I mean, it wasn't back-to-back-to-back-to-back like Houston runs.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't back-to-back like L.A. was 21 years ago. But are they the best team ever, Gabe?
Well, I got some stats. I got stats. We don't have to answer this. We can just lay the question because it's so late in the podcast. We can just lay the question and come back to it.
Oh, okay, good. Because I've been so good at being bold with my stuff. And
we can come back to this.
Can't come up with an answer.
All right. First, so as you mentioned, first back-to-back champion since the Sparks 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
Huge. Very hard. Like almost impossible to win back-to-back championships. As you mentioned, those Lynx could never do it, and they got really close a few times.
Yeah.
Best offensive rating in league history, 111.5 points per 100 possessions.
Wow.
Better than the Mystics, yeah, by about a point per 100 possession, 1.5 point by 100 possession. Wow. Extremely impressive. Extremely impressive. They had the best net rating since 2000 in those Comets.
Wow.
And they are the third best all-time in net rating, which is your points per 100 possession differential. So your offensive rating minus your defensive rating is your is your net rating. Third wow. best all-time behind the two of the Comets teams that won championship. 15.7 plus 15.7 on the year. Best net rating in 2023, 95.8 points per 100 possessions, narrowly beating out the Connecticut Sun. Okay, so now.
Oh, man. You work it, Gabe.
So only seven teams have ever finished first in offensive rating and defensive rating.
Okay.
One of them is this Aces team.
Okay.
Then the other six, one of them was the 2016 Lynx, who did not win the title.
They didn't.
They didn't, but they went to the finals.
Right.
The 2017 Lynx, who won the finals.
They won.
The 2014 Mercury, who won the finals. And all three of the Comets teams that won the finals.
Wow.
So I think that's kind of, you mentioned most of them. I think the Sparks are the only ones that aren't in that group that you mentioned in terms of the best teams ever. I'd put them right up there with the Lynx and the Comets, because I think those two are the two for me that are probably the best.
Yeah.
And when you look at the Lynx and you look at the Aces, it kind of looks like similar here. We got Maya Moore type of winner in terms of in Asia Wilson.
Yeah.
A great point guard in Chelsea Gray. You know, we got shooters.
I think you need to put that up for the the people. Up for the people. We need a poll.
We will do that. Let's do that one this time.
That's another great one. You come up with really great.
Well, I'm glad we didn't put up the Stewie one, because now we would look bad.
No, yeah, don't put the Stewie up.
Yeah, this is not Stewie's best team ever.
No, let's put that up though, because I think that's a great discussion to be had, right? Just about, you know, the history of the league and, you know, how efficient those teams were. And I know that LA only, you know, those back-to-back, and when I say only, I'm not slighting, I'm just saying like the other ones had four and they had two. Now the Aces have two, but their numbers are equated to the teams who won four. So that is different. That's pretty special.
And especially if you only take the best team of the runs, right? And we don't know if this is going to be the best team of the Aces run, just for the record.
Right.
They could get better. Remember, they had two starters injured in this game and were missing Candace Parker for all the season.
And Rick.
So this team could get better. But the 2017 Lynx, and probably, you know, you could argue 2016, 2017, best years of the Lynx because Sylvia Fowles was so good.
Yeah.
So taking that year, that was the year that they pulled off the same feat as the Aces. The Comets, I don't know, man. The Comets were ridiculous. There's
good, man.
I just want to see the Comets in today's league.
I know.
Where it's like, just there's a lot more depth of talent.
Yeah.
I would love to see them playing in this league because I think they'd still kick butt.
They would, they'd be running. They'd give people the blues, man. That would be great. The eras. Yeah.
The eras. And our Taylor Swift
and
era.
And LA teams too. The LA teams too. With Nikki Teasley.
Yeah.
Tamika Dixon, Mabika Mawadi, all that. Delisha Milton Jones, stop it. They were killers, man.
I was trying to find this out. If someone could find this out, like someone find the last time that there was three teammates on all WNBA. I'm sure the stat is out there and I just missed it. Because there was three this year. Chelsea, Jackie, and Asia made it. Mm-hmm. I was looking to see if there was other years where that happened for those really great teams. So if anyone has that stat, please let me
know. I'm sure somebody has that, man. Dano probably has it.
Dano, no one talked to Dano today. Give him some space.
Yeah,
he's having a rough day.
He's having a rough New York afternoon.
it's not great. All right, we got a couple minutes. I'm just gonna. All right, okay. Christy, get post position. Do your work early.
Okay.
You're in post. Okay. The Phoenix Mercury have hired Orlando Magic assistant Nate Tibbetts to be their head coach. He is the highest paid coach in WNBA history. He has never coached women's or did he coach women's basketball at some point? I don't think he's ever.
He coached some international basketball.
Okay.
Two bronze medal. I saw that.
Has he ever coached women's basketball?
I think it was a women's team, but I'm not 100% on that. I thought someone said that he coached in EuroLeague and they won a bronze medal in something, but I'm not sure if it was men's or women's. Then I know he's with Portland and in the NBA. He was with the Trailblazers. He was with Orlando, obviously, and in one other team in the NBA as an assistant.
I don't see any
women's
coaching assistants. I mean, women's coaching experience. Okay, he was the head coach of the Sioux Falls Skyforce. There's some Miami Heat experience. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
His dad was a coach. He coached high school girls and women's college basketball for 30 years. So he was His dad did. So no women's basketball coaching experience.
Am I supposed to say something, man? Listen, okay. You already know, okay? And you're speaking to someone who, man, you will get me in trouble, Gabe, but I'm going to say it because I'm going to speak my heart. My dad taught me you can't go wrong when you do that. So I'm going to do that. All right. You're speaking to someone who was leapfrogged several times professionally in the coaching ranks when I was in college coaching. And I did it for 10 years. So I'm not going to say like where or when or whatever, but I will say that it happened and it was horrible for me professionally, because you're talking about having a ceiling, you know, on these players, you know, Jackie Young and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, thinking that there's no ceiling and then there actually being one sucks. Especially when you're putting the work in and you're doing your job and you're, you know, being told that you're doing your job well. And that for me, that's going to be a lasting situation. So for me, seeing that and also knowing that he's going to be the highest paid coach as well, just stepping right in and getting highest paid, even more than Becky Hammond, who just won back-to-back titles. To me, I don't really appreciate that. As a Black woman, as a woman, as a WNBA player, I don't know. And I don't know him from Adam. And I know, you know, Dame gave him shout out like because he coached him. I get it. And he's probably a great guy. He's a girl dad. They posted that on the Phoenix site. And I'm not trying to, you know, when they come into D.C., I want to shake his hand. We're good.
Yeah.
But it's a trigger for me because all the years of work that we put in, sometimes it's just a thankless process. And for me, that's not fair. For me, that's a slap in the face. For me, that is looking at the league that has over 80% Black women in it. And then to have the joy of seeing Teresa Weatherspoon get the Chicago job and then to go full 180. And I mean, why isn't she the highest paid walking into that job? She played in the league. She coached with the Pels. Like, why isn't she getting the highest paid check as a coach in the WNBA? If she just walked in and she has more experience in the WNBA than he does, and she coached in the NBA too. So for me, it make sense. Like, and to, I had to go, and this, hopefully I don't start, you know, cause me, I'll get a little, and it's more anger. It's not sadness, it's anger. So it's like, you know, it's like taking off the Band-Aid and again, a trigger. But for me, I'm an assistant coach in this position, and I'm going to go through this quickly. And the person above me, the associate head coach or the number one assistant or whatever it was, they left, right, for another job. So that job's open, and I've been there 3-4 years, getting recruits coming in, just boom, 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 boom. We're doing all right, you know, and I'm doing my job, okay? This is before kids or anything, so I'm like all over the place, traveling. I'm doing all of recruiting, boom, 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 doing it. Okay, everywhere. And for me to be told, like, can you go to the airport and pick up the candidates for this job? So for me, that is a trigger. Okay. So everybody has their own thing. Like, you get bitten by a dog when you're little, you're going to be scared of dogs your whole life. Right. So it's all relative. And to everyone else, it may not be a thing, but for those of us who, you know, dedicated their lives to this game because they love it, those who put in the work and still don't get rewarded for it. And I almost feel like when Asia was crying after the game, it was all of that too, because you don't get your respect because the work that you do needs to be seen. And to feel unseen and to be leapfrogged and to be looked over, I mean, that's a tough deal. So to see that happen again, and again, he's probably a great guy. He's a girl dad, he's a great guy. He's coached, his dad coached and all this. He has a story and a journey like all of us do. But for those of us who have gotten kicked in the teeth and not been able to move up the ladder or to be told, well, you just had a baby, so you can't possibly do this job well. Listen, that's heavy for me. And I don't care. I mean, I know I'm not the only one out there that feels like that or who has had that happen, and not just in basketball. Just in general, for women, it's hard. For Black women, it's even more difficult to have that happen, to know that, you know, your passion and grit and grind and work and all that is not seen. And even if it is seen, maybe it's seen as not good enough ever. And that's tough. So for me, it's a trigger. That's all I'm going to say about it, because it's heavy for me, Gabe, obviously, but I don't talk about it a lot, which is why it's right on the surface at the moment. But that's very hurtful to all of us who, you know, have just, I don't know, dedicated their lives to the love of the game that they've had over the years, like from when I was little and then all the way up. Like, it never changed for me.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's this brought back that experience.
Yeah.
And it's valid and fair, and I think a very rational response to this. And again, it's nothing to do with Nate, like you mentioned. Yeah. Probably great. He is a great guy. I'm sure he's a great guy. They wouldn't hire him if he wasn't. Probably a great dude. Probably amazing. I'm sure he's a great basketball mind. Yeah. And to me, you know, I don't think every WNBA coach has to be a Black woman. I would like that, but I understand it's not necessarily who's going to be the best candidate. Here in Washington, Eric Tebow is a candidate. Is our head coach, and you know, I think the difference is, and I think Don said this last year at some point, is that Eric put in his dues in women's basketball.
Yes,
for a very long time.
Long time.
And he grew up in this game, and he invested in this game. He's a part of this game. And Dawn said it last year. I remember in what context it came up, but she was like, we don't mind male head coaches who have invested in this game and have paid their dividends in this game. It's different.
Thank you.
It is different.
Thank you.
I'll say it again. It is different. Women's basketball is different.
Thank you.
At the very least, at the top levels, it's different. Maybe not in the high school levels. I don't think it's like, you know, it doesn't feel like that is that different in terms of coaching at that level. But when you should get to the, you know, collegiate and professional, it is a very different universe in terms of everything. You know, resources, people management. There's just a very different tone, tenor, way of doing things on the women's basketball side. Not better or worse, just different. And this person never was a part of that. And to me, it's just like, you are as you mentioned, Chris, you're skipping over all of the candidates in our side of the world that are qualified and are dying to be in the WNBA. And right. I've wanted to be in the WNBA for a long time.
Right.
Hey, look, I hope this guy becomes the best coach ever. I hope he becomes Mike Tebow, right? I hope he becomes the guy who's here, and we're talking about him in 40 years as, the elder statesman of the league. And there's a similar story with Mike Tebow, who was in the men's side of the game and then came over to. So it's not, again, this has nothing to do with the person. It's the process of what Christy's saying, of people being skipped over, of our side of the sport feeling like it got skipped over.
Right. And being handed the most money of any of the coaches in the league.
Well,
and so not oh my God, my brain is like, but not Teresa Weatherspoon.
Well,
I
don't know. I like the whole highest paid thing. I guess coaches' salaries go up like the players do. And I'm just wondering if this guy has like a really good agent and there's some sort of like, you know, incentive.
But then maybe not tell us, because it's almost that I think was even worse. Like,
so this is what, this is why it's a problem.
We that? Can we not know everything? Like
he's not going to know. That's a problem.
Hire that guy. Just hire him, hire Coach Nate Tibbetts. And then don't tell us the financial.
This guy and his agent
made it worse.
Yeah, right. For me. This guy and his agent though are not in women's basketball. They don't get it. They don't know why that's a problem, because they haven't been like, that is the problem right there. It's not because he's a bad guy. It's not because he's a bad agent. It's not because this is all done in bad faith and everyone should be mad. No, it's that he doesn't know that this is not the thing you do.
No,
because he's not in this side of the world and doesn't understand, you know, the culture of women's basketball. And so I think that's just like one of the signs of like, oh, this person's like new around here. Like any agent would want to do that. Say, hey, my client is the highest paid client ever, whatever, to get good cred. That was not a good idea. That was not a good idea.
No, you're being dragged on Twitter because of that.
I'm fond of saying, in the business, we say that's not good.
It's not good.
You need to talk to another lawyer.
Yeah. And Muffet McGraw had a thread. So please read it, because I reposted one of them. But she had something to say about it, and I thought it was very profound. And I've been on panels with her, with the Women's Sports Foundation and Voices in Sport. And she is still, obviously, you know, she was a longtime Hall of Fame coach at Notre Dame for years. And, you know, now she's doing broadcasting in the ACC for women's basketball. But, I mean, she's a huge voice for women in sports and equality in that space. And equality in every way. Equality in opportunity. Equality in your finances, right? But equality in you know, just having the chance. I think the opportunity is even more so than the money. But then when you add that money part on, it just made it a lot worse, like throwing gasoline on a fire, like, wait, what? And again, he's probably great. Matt Ishbia is the, you know, owner down there, and I'm sure, you know, they go through the rigors. Kathy Engelbert too, I'm sure. I mean, she has to okay everything. And we know that he's going to be in that position for a reason, to do well and win. And then, you know, for Nikki Blue to rejuvenate that team and give them that confidence to push on after they made a coaching change midseason, I feel really badly for her, because I saw her in action and in motion with that team, and they respected her at a high level. And even though they had 7 wins, I believe, you know, that in no way equated to, you know, what she was trying to do. And they had some really good wins with her at the helm. So I just thought for sure that she would stay. And again, it's like me having to go pick up somebody for the job that I'm qualified for. That is the killer. Yeah. And the trigger for me. Nikki Blue, love you, baby. I love her.
And she'll be back.
She'll
be back in the future.
She's terrific.
And once you get that little, line, head coaching experience on your resume, it's a lot easier to get more of those. So hopefully Nikki Blue is back on the first seat of the bench. And again, I really hope Nate Tibbetts has like a 40-year career in the WNBA and wins multiple championships and is just amazing. And in the end, we say, wow, this guy, you know, he really broke the mold and he really has embraced women's basketball. I hope it happens.
Me too. Same.
A little upsetting this week, as Christy outlined, and I appreciate you sharing that.
Drop my shoulders.
We have talked for an hour and a half, though, so we should
God, that's our longest pod.
We've talked longer.
Oh, over the pandemic, yeah, we did.
We've talked longer on multiple occasions. Come on. We do this. This is what we do, Chris.
This is what we do. Yeah. No, it was a great chat of all things hoops and college hoops coming next week. I love that. Getting right into it, the beginning of November, all that tips off. So that's going to be fun. And oh my God, that Iowa game, 55,646. And we'll get to that next week too. It was details amazing.
Next week.
Oh my God, it was electrifying. And I still get chills down my neck and my arms because it was a magical situation to be in. But anyway, speaking of magical back-to-back championship run for the Las Vegas Aces. So kudos to you guys, Becky Hammond, et al., the whole squad. We appreciate y'all for listening to our really long pod this time here on Courtside with Christy and Gabe. So for Gabe Ibrahim, I'm Christy Winterscott, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.